Very happy Saturday afternoon. Oh, the sun is popping out downtown. It's because Ryan Theriault, Greg Booth, and Jeff Theriault just stopped on by to join us for the 2 o'clock hour. Gentlemen, how y'all doing here today?
We're wonderful, and we brought the sunshine.
You sure did.
Doing well.
Exactly. I was hoping you'd all unanimously at one time have like a whole thing.
You want to try it again?
Yeah. How are y'all doing today?
Perfect. Good.
Okay.
Well, we nailed that one, guys. Ryan, what do you guys do? Who are you guys?
Well, we are a collection of attorneys that handle all types of cases, but primarily we work in the workers' compensation arena, helping injured workers throughout the state of Illinois. We particularly focus in areas involving construction workers, police, fire, those sorts of people that often put their health and safety on the line for us and our families.
Right. And over the last couple of years, and Jeff, I know as a former police officer, you know this well, there was no work from home for police, fire, paramedics during COVID, for nurses. And there was a lot going on in the workers' comp field, wasn't there?
Yep. Interestingly enough, some departments in the suburbs came up with plans to work from home. They were detectives were on call. They were doing goofy things with shifts. They were working several straight shifts in a row, and then taking like a week off to try to stagger it.
Interesting.
Type of thing. They tried to modify things that way.
Yeah.
And on patrol, they were trying to change up the shifts too, making them longer, so less.
Less back and forth, less right. exchanging and of people,
keeping
yeah.
teams together, that type of thing. Yeah.
Boy, that was wild, huh? But, I mean, there was a lot of COVID cases in police and fire departments, and I'm just going to jump right to it because we talk about COVID. I imagine there's a lot of police and fire and paramedics you guys know or nurses that are dealing with long-term COVID. Is that under a potential umbrella of workers' compensation?
Yeah, absolutely. We represent, like you said, a lot of people that came across that, particularly firemen, because they are in the firehouse together, they're living together, and so if one person was getting it, all of them were getting it. Mm-hmm. And so, we have that, and we have, you know, people like nurses and other first responders and people who caught it from the workplace. Fortunately, most people were able to recover from
right.
COVID, and they were off for a couple weeks, and then they get back, but there are a small percentage of people who have long-term COVID, who have very serious ongoing issues, pulmonary issues, cardiac issues, other respiratory, problems. And so, we do have some of those cases, and we represent those people. It's a very difficult case and area of law, and especially in the medicine, because there's still so much that's unknown.
Well, don't you also have to prove it came from work? Is that a hard bar to reach?
So going back to what you were just talking with Jeff about, there are some presumptions that were added into the work comp law. And so if you were a first responder and someone who was required to continue working during that time, and I believe that date is through the end of June of 2021, mm-hmm. so prior to the end of June 2021, there's a presumption that you got it from work. It's a rebuttable presumption, meaning mm-hmm. it's then the employer's obligation to turn around and their burden to say, no, you didn't get this from work.
So it shifts the burden.
Correct.
So before it would be you have to prove you got X, Y, or Z at work, but for COVID, for first responders or people that were in the office or always on the job, you know, the employer would now have to say, well, you were actually off the 2 weeks and we have pictures of you in Cancun and that's where you got it. It's a shift of presumption.
Correct. And the standard's not very high to then shift it back. So
okay.
A lot of that presumption is rebutted. The cases that aren't disputed are those ones where there was a breakout and we know of, a meat factory that had it just rip through there or, different factors where we know there were 20, 30, 50, 100 employees that got COVID at the same time, it's very easy, to say that it's more likely you got it from that than from going to the gas station.
Right. And a normal recovery, there's not workers' comp for that. You got your time off, you recovered, you're fine, right? Well, we're talking about longer problems.
In addition to the longer problems, though, they may be entitled to medical bills and the time off paid. We tragically have cases that resulted in death.
Yeah.
And that happened, and those families need assistance navigating the waters after that. There are cases where there were breakouts. Oftentimes the cases we find are really hard to rebut or where the person lives alone. There's no chance of contracting the illness from the family or anything like that. It's easily traceable back to work. So those are the types of things we look for in the COVID world. They are difficult claims, but still people need compensation if they're exposed to it at work.
For sure. I jumped right in there with COVID. I want to back up a little bit and make sure everyone understands, just from a basic perspective, what workers' comp is here in Illinois. So workers' compensation is an insurance that employers buy so that they're able to help assist, or they're mandated to assist, or pay for employees who suffer injuries, illnesses at work. Is that a good basic definition?
Good basic definition. There are some...
You could tell me it's a terrible definition.
No, the only thing I would add is there's some employers or entities that choose to be self-insured in that regard. So if they don't want to obtain insurance, very typically the structure is that they obtain insurance just like they would for health insurance for their employees. And that is to provide three basic benefits when people are hurt. Number one, pay for their time off work while they're restricted from working. Two, payment of the medical bills with the doctors of the employee's choosing. And three, a settlement if we can demonstrate the person has permanent partial disability or some permanent injury after the treatment concludes.
Now, every employer in Illinois is required to have it, right? As far as I know, right?
Yeah. Workers' compensation insurance and coverage for workers is required for employees. And, you know, there's certain instances where people might not be defined as an employee, such as a 1099. You know, if you're a 1099, you're not technically an employee. You're a contractor, and they don't necessarily have to have insurance in those instances. But we've had many, many cases where the person will tell the individual, you're a contractor, you're a 1099, but then they control everything they do. And actually, under the Act, there's specific instances where they can end up being found to be employees anyway, and that's where
I see what you're saying.
That's where people can really get in trouble, as from an employer standpoint.
I understand. So you're saying that 1099s, generally speaking, if it's a legitimate contractor, you were hired for this one gig, you did it complete, and maybe we use you a couple times here or there, you're not covered as a 1099. But if you're someone that's employed there, you're every day, you're essentially working 40 hours a week, and the company is just paying you as a contractor, you can retroactively say, "Hey, look, I know contractors aren't covered. This guy, this gal, they're not a contractor."
Right, and control is really the number one thing they look for there, is saying, is this employer controlling all of the aspects of their job? Are they telling them where to go, when to show up, what type of material to use, how to do the job? All of those things come into play.
Okay, so if someone is hurt, and we'll get to specifics later on, exactly what is or isn't covered, but generally speaking, is it the employer paying out of their pocket, or is it they've paid this insurance, the insurance pays for it?
The best example I like to use is our own employees, our own staff. We know that best. If they were to be injured, we have a policy in place, policy of insurance, that would provide those benefits. So rarely is it out of the employer's pocket. Where we do see employers having to pay is if they violated the law, did not obtain workers' compensation insurance, and now they're personally responsible for it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the situation where the employer consciously made a decision to not follow the mandates, the regulations, and the requirements, and chose to go a different path.
I guess one reason I ask that is if someone feels like they were hurt at work, but they love their boss, and they love the place they work for, and they don't want to mess with their they feel honestly almost bad about it, they shouldn't. If you were hurt at work, you're entitled to it.
That happens all the time. And we tell people, well, you got hurt and you're putting your medical claim through your employer provided medical insurance.
Mm-hmm.
What's the difference? It's you're using their insurance to help you for something that to get better by something that happened while you were not working. Why wouldn't you do the same for something while you were working?
Mm-hmm. And I would add that one thing that calms our clients down when we in this exact question situation is it's not a lawsuit. So when you file a workers' compensation claim, you are the petitioner petitioning for benefits under this act. The employer is not a defendant. They are a respondent responding to your petition. There is an act that controls this. It is not in the circuit court. It's a separate system. So when they find out that if they come to us and they say, I want to sue my employer because I am really mad at them, we can't help them. You cannot sue your employer for a work-related injury. This is your only option.
Interesting. So I can't sue my employer if I'm hurt at work for something that was grossly negligent, maybe on the employer's part?
Correct. So
this is the way to do it, workers' comp.
The exclusive remedy is workers' compensation if you get hurt at work. The only time that you can have a lawsuit that kind of corresponds with your injury is if there is a third party who is responsible and negligent for the injury. Certainly, we can talk a lot more about third-party cases and what that means. But a typical example is like an auto accident. If you're a police officer, for example, and someone rear-ends you, well, you were hurt while working. You have a workers' compensation claim. But the cause of that accident is from a third party, another individual who hit you in their car.
Uh-huh.
So you also have a case against them and their insurance carrier, their auto carrier.
But not against your company. But so,
you know, John,
please,
if
go
I
ahead.
May, something to look at it in regards to, if you, a lot of people are working against humongous companies. They're working for humongous companies with deep pockets. If they were to sue their employer,
they'd lose.
It would be delayed. Well, it would be delayed forever.
Yeah.
The goal of the Workers' Comp Act is to provide benefits to employees quickly. So
it's actually in the employee's benefit.
It absolutely is, and that's the reason that the act was instituted.
Interesting.
Now, it's called the Illinois Workers' Compensation Act, but we've argued for many, many years it could also be called the Employer Limited Liability Act, because it does limit the employee's ability to bring a negligence claim. But in exchange, as Jeff said, it's supposed to be a little more prompt and swift in its delivery.
So it's the system we've got. It's funny because it makes sense now, because Patrick Dolan, who's a great employment lawyer, talks about suing companies all the time, but that's not for injuries. That's for sexual discrimination or illegal firings or age discrimination. That's a whole other realm.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And one of the things that arises potentially out of a workers' compensation claim, in addition to the third-party claims that Jeff and Greg discussed, is a potentially wrongful discharge claim. So if you file a workers' compensation claim, the employer cannot terminate you for that in the state of Illinois. So if they do, then we're the ones giving out Patrick's name.
Call
their office and make certain that you pursue your rights under that, because you are protected in that regard.
So, I mean, workers' comp lawyers, like what you guys do at Theriel Booth, what Patrick Dolan does at Conti and Dolan, they're different things, but often they can be interchangeably, you know, back and forth. I mean, because you guys do different things.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, interesting stuff. By the way, before I go any further, tbfirm.com is where you want people to go. The phone number is 630-526-4242, right? 526-4242, 630-526-4242. We have a lot of texts about this 1099 thing. We have a lot of 1099 employees that listen to us. Some drive vehicles for one of the companies, or one of the big names that we know out of California. Uber's Lyft drivers, 1099. Can I, as a 1099 employee, is there something I can get to cover and help on the job? Or is that out of your guys' realm?
Anybody that owns a company can obtain their own coverage. So I think some of it might have to be. Typically, owners of companies are excluded from workers' comp unless they intentionally opt into a policy. So it's kind of an insurance question as to their way their business is established, the way they formed their...
So like if they're an LLC or
exactly.
An S-Corp, if they're their own employee, employer, et cetera.
Those folks should really consult with an insurance expert. They would say, can you bring me within the context of a workers' comp policy?
Okay, that's good to know. 312-981-7200 if you have any questions. Why don't we take a quick break here. More with Ryan Theriault, Greg Booth, and Jeff Theriault after this on Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association on WGN. News in 3 minutes. More with our conversation with Ryan Theriault, Greg Booth, and Jeff Theriault from Theriault Booth, tbfirm.com, 630-526-4242. Okay, Ryan, a lot of people work in a lot of different places, right? The workplace can be in other states for some people, right? So what is the jurisdictional issues when it comes to workers' compensation?
So I get the easy question. Thanks. give the other ones to these guys.
Yeah.
So workers' comp covers people that are hired in the state of Illinois. If the contract for hire was made in Illinois, no matter where they're hurt.
Does that mean that the company's headquarters are in Illinois, or that they were hired to do work in Illinois, or a little of both?
It's somewhat complex. There is a series of kind of test that determines where the contract for hire was made. A lot of time it's the last act before employment, a background check, a drug test, something of that nature.
Okay.
So, but if it's clear, if their only presence is in Illinois, they're going to be an Illinois employer. That's one category. The other category is if they work anywhere and they're hurt in Illinois. If the injury or accident, work accident, occurred in Illinois, that's another potential workers' compensation claim. So we look at either the contract for hire was made in Illinois, they're an Illinois employer, employee situation, or alternatively, the accident was in Illinois for an out-of-state employer.
And those are what determines whether you can go through the Illinois Workers' Compensation Act.
That's right. And I think there's some other potential scenarios. I'm aware of at least one very, very large company headquartered in Chicago that has put it in their employment contracts that Illinois shall be the location for workers' compensation claims. And a lot of employers would prefer other states.
Well, that's what I was going to ask. What does it matter? Are there other states that are more lenient? Does Illinois have a strong workers' comp situation that is very employee-favored? Like, what's the advantage of being in Illinois for doing that?
Illinois offers benefits for the employee that are reasonable and fair, and some states have cut those back, even some neighboring states. So there are sometimes employer for a cost savings analysis may say we prefer a different state that doesn't cost as much or where insurance is not as much because of a strict cost containment issue for the employer.
So there's a couple different ways to get this through the Illinois system. Either you were hired here in Illinois, even if the work happened in Indiana, or you were doing the work here in Illinois, even if you were hired from a company out of Indiana. Am I understanding that right?
In its essence, that's correct. Yep.
Right. And there's nuances and there's other elements there, but people should know that they, you know, if they were hurt in Illinois or hired by a company in Illinois, to talk to you guys because it's better for you in Illinois than a lot of other states for the employees to go through the Illinois system.
And that's true. It's not an absolute truth. There are some states that maybe have different arrangements or different benefits. It is a state-by-state program, so every state is different.
If anyone's confused, they can just call you guys, right?
Always.
Okay, yes. 630-526-4242. Therialt Booth at tbfirm.com. After the news, Jeff, you and I are going to talk about people that move around a lot. Is the workplace the only place where, you know, something can happen and you get workers' comp for? We're going to dive into that and any of your questions, 312-981-7200, after the news on WGN. We are powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. Our phone number, 312-981-7200. A lot of good questions on the text line. Feel free to call in as well. We're talking about workers' comp with Ryan Therialt, Greg Booth, Jeff Therialt from Therialt Booth, tbfirm.com. Okay. I know a lot of people wonder about workers' comp and think, oh, it's only when something happens at the workplace. But Jeff, workplaces can be mobile. They can be moving. So how does that work with workers' comp?
Well, when you're doing something for the benefit of the employer, that the employer reasonably expects you to do, they're considered what's called a traveling employee.
So like if it's just part of the job?
Yeah, yeah. It's something that's expected. So something as minor as taking the bank deposit around the corner to the bank.
It's part of the job.
Yeah, but traveling, traveling even an injury in a hotel, because mm-hmm. traveling for work, you're expected to stay at a hotel. It's reasonably expected that you'll stay in a hotel. Even internationally, Greg handled a pretty interesting case at an event that's held every 4 years regarding a sporting event that's held every 4 years. He handled the one there out of
the
country.
Was it one in the hot part of the season or the cold part of the season?
I think it was cold.
Okay.
Yeah, right. it was cold. Yeah.
Okay. So, all right.
So, I mean, that was, it was an Illinois connection, but it was done for the benefit of an employee when they were in another country.
Mm-hmm.
So, a traveling employee, they're working for an employer, but it's outside the employer's physical location.
But getting hurt on your way to the job as just part of your normal commute, yay or nay, could be covered in workers' comp?
Typically not.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense to me. Okay.
But once again, there's a lot of things that need to be analyzed. A construction worker who picks up the truck from a location traveling to the job site, you know, that's where we would analyze everything.
Yeah, if it's anything essential or you were asked to do or as part of the normal routine mm-hmm. of moving equipment, moving yourself, not on a commuting way, but moving money, moving tools, moving whatever it is. What about police officers, right? I mean, that's a very mobile job, right?
Oh, sure. And there's a lot of different types of injuries. Probably the number one we get with those type of employees are car accidents.
Mm-hmm.
And interestingly enough, like we touched earlier, that's not only a workers' comp claim, but oftentimes then it's what's called a third-party claim where somebody else is responsible as well, and there's a way for recovery from the third party.
Mm-hmm.
They get T-bone at an intersection.
Right.
You know, we can handle the claim for the workers' comp, but also that third-party case, which is, like I said, another way of recovery.
So you can be a one-stop shop where people can go to you. You can work out the workers' comp claim, which, as we said earlier, is not, you're not suing your employer. It's an outside the court system sort of way of doing things. And you guys could also handle the lawsuit against the individual who ran the red light or whatever it may be, right?
Brother, that's exactly explained well. The key about that, the weird scenario about that is, that's the moment the employer becomes on our side of the coin. with those cases, if we're able to pursue a personal injury claim successfully against the at-fault driver in this hypothetical, the employer and their insurance company will receive their funds back that they've expended. So they want to team up.
Really?
Yeah, they want to team up with us and say, here's the evidence we've developed along the way, and where it becomes less adversarial at that point and more working together to make certain that the person that caused whatever the accident might have been is the one that ultimately bears the burden of the cost.
Interesting. So whatever the employer had to pay the employee or part of that workers' comp claim gets covered by this third party if they're found liable or guilty of whatever happened.
Correct. And the employer gets repaid before our client necessarily receives a dollar from the at-fault party. So it's important that if you have a scenario like that, you have attorneys that understand both the personal injury aspects as well as the workers' compensation aspects and how those two interplay and result in reimbursement to each of those entities.
Okay. So when I think about like workers' comp, my head always goes to like a construction job and you break something. But like you got to think outside the box a little bit in terms of the injury you can get at work, right? I mean, there's a lot that goes into this, right?
Interesting. We have a lot of teachers that come to us, and you wouldn't think they get hurt. They get hurt by students. They, you know, a flying desk or other on the playground, rolling an ankle on something. We have a lot of that. That's one area that I think we get a lot that you wouldn't normally think about that, but they get some serious injuries from that.
What about like repetitive injuries where things take a long time? Whether it's, I think a famous example people say is carpal tunnel or something like that. You mentioned teachers. Teachers have to stand sometimes all day long. There could be injury. Like, is that harder to prove, or is that something that can be proven?
So it's definitely something that can be proven. They do tend to be a little bit more difficult than an acute trauma. You broke a bone, you tore a ligament.
Here was the moment this happened.
Exactly,
right?
Exactly. Those are pretty clear cases. But Illinois is fortunate in that we do have claims for repetitive injuries. A lot of those are carpal tunnel or even rotator cuff tears. We do see those. But you're not going to be able typically to prove just from standing or doing or walking or everyday activities. So typically they involve a lot of repetitive movements and oftentimes involve some sort of force or weight involved as well. So, you know, it's not as simple as saying, well, you know, I had to, you know, move my arm or reaching for something. But if I'm lifting something, even if it's 2, 3, 4 pounds, but you're lifting it up onto a shelf or overhead, you're twisting a heavy door or turning something, you know, multiple times every hour. That's when you can start to see those repetitive injuries and the breakdown in the wrists or the elbows or shoulders, or whatever it might be.
I have a dumb question that's almost quite literally out of left field. You mentioned rotator cuff. Can a baseball player claim workers' comp against the baseball team if they tear their rotator cuff?
Yes.
Yeah. We've represented athletes that have been injured on the ice, on the field. They are entitled to workers' compensation.
Pro athletes?
Correct. Pro athletes. In fact, in some instances, if the athlete was playing, going back to our jurisdiction discussion earlier, if some athletes were injured in a state that wasn't favorable or didn't have a real beneficial workers' compensation claim, but they might be here in town playing one of our hometown sports teams, they would maybe avail themselves of a venue here from an Illinois workers' compensation claims. So ultimately, they still need to be provided their pay for their time off. They need to be provided medical care, and ultimately, if their career is ended or whatever it might be compensated for that. Now, as compared to the typical worker's salary, they have caps in place that they're not seeing millions upon millions of dollars to really fairly compensate them for what they might have lost. They'll take out other insurance policies on their career and do other things, but they are protected by the Illinois workers' compensation claims, and more importantly, do file them.
You kind of mentioned those three pillars again. What are they? What are you entitled to?
You're entitled to your pay while you're off work, restricted, a percentage of that. You're entitled to medical care with doctors of the employee's choosing, which we believe is a huge right and benefit under the Workers' Compensation Act. And lastly, if you're able to demonstrate permanent injury, you're entitled to a settlement based on whatever that nature and extent of those injuries might be.
What happens as injuries evolve or change? Let's say you have a pretty serious injury and 10 years later, 5 years later, let's say, your arm has to be amputated. I don't know what – I'm trying to think of examples where something gets worse, right, even with medical intervention. Are workers' comp claims, like, are they, is there a longevity to them where they cover things for a while, or does there have to be new claims filed? I'm asking kind of a complex question, but I imagine it's something that happens.
Yeah, it happens.
I also love when you all three look at each other like, who's going to take this one?
Notice they never look my way, though. I'm looking.
Yeah, you're ready for it. Yeah.
You know, the first example that comes to mind with this, and Greg can, you know, expand on it a little bit, but is a person who's injured critically and maybe is in a comatose state for years and then dies after that. And how does that claim kind of progress through the years?
Right.
We've had those situations.
So what is how does it work?
Well, it depends on if your claim is still open. Okay, so, you know, a lot of claims, you have an injury at work. I'm going to use the spine as an example.
Okay.
You herniate a disc in your neck. You have a work injury, and if you get your treatment, maybe you have surgery, a fusion, and you're released back to work, and either your case at that point is ready for settlement, in which your case is going to be closed, or you may have to go to trial. And typically speaking, if you're settling your case, you're also closing out your medical rights.
For anything in the future.
Correct. If it goes to trial, technically speaking, your rights are left open for medical treatment, but down the road, it's going to get harder and harder to say it's still related to that accident.
Okay.
But there is something that's very well known in the medical literature called adjacent level disc disease, which means when you've had an injury to a level of your spine, you're more likely to have issues at the level above and below. And that can take years to develop.
Mm-hmm.
So if your case has been closed and 5-10 years from now you have another issue, it's very unlikely that you're going to be able to prove that that's still related to that work complaint.
Especially if it was settled. Settled is almost, it is what it is. It's settled.
Exactly.
A trial, you've been ruled in your favor and you got X, Y, or Z. In theory, you could bring it back. But as time progresses, it gets harder and harder to connect the dots, is what we're saying.
Yeah, that's true. And I would say the only difference is if there's an aggravation or a new accident. So
Okay. If
5 years later, you have another accident and now you've aggravated that condition or you've worsened that condition, that's a whole new claim. And
at work, if you do it at work.
Exactly, exactly.
I got a couple of questions coming in fast and furious here on the text line. Can a workers' comp case be brought against an employer after an employee retires? Is there a statute of limitations?
That's funny. We were discussing this exact issue in the hallway before we came on. And
is this you texting me here on the line? Just so I
did. We were trying to come up with easy questions. Actually, our parents texted that one.
Right.
But we want, as far as that's concerned, the statute of limitations typically in a workers' compensation claim is 3 years from the date of accident. If you do not file your claim within that period, you're forever barred from doing so. That's the starting point of the analysis.
If it's like an acute thing that happened.
Really, any accident.
Okay.
And for repetitive stress claims, that gets a little more nuanced
little
as to
murky,
what the date actually might be. Sometimes the diagnosis date, sometimes something else. But we start there. And then whether or not the person is still working, you know, doesn't always defeat the claim. It can often still be filed. So
right.
Those are, and in fact, some people choose to say, let me finish out my tenure if I'm going to quit or resign, whatever, and then I can pursue the claim after because I don't want to deal with it while I'm employed. So it's not an automatic bar. I can't say at this point it's an automatic guaranteed claim, but more likely than not, they still have the ability if they're within that time period.
But if you're already retired and you're talking about the three pillars of what you're entitled to, at that point you lose the entitlement to pay because you've already voluntarily left that job, right? You'd be just entitled to the medical bills, perhaps in a settlement, perhaps?
You're speaking advanced workers' comp language now, and you're exactly right. That's what happens is you may have taken yourself out of some of the benefits available, even some of the potential settlement angles for a permanent partial disability claim or how you settle the nature and extent at the end. So that's right. It's often reduced, but maybe not eliminated.
Yeah, I always wanted to go to law school. I didn't, but I like to pretend like I definitely did at some point. Hey, 312's got a great question. Exposure to asbestos that just occurred but may not show up as cancer for 20 years. Hang on, we're going to answer that after this break, talking with the great folks at Theralt Booth. You can give them a call at 630-526-4242. Everyone, write this number down. Get your contacts out on your phone, 630-526-4242. Just enter it as workers' comp, enter it as Theralt Booth, enter it as TB firm, whatever you're going to remember it as, because you want this number handy, 630-526-4242, or visit tbfirm.com. We're going to talk about cancer showing up years later after exposure on the workplace. After this on Let's Get Legal on WGN. Theralt Booth here in studio, Ryan, Greg, and Jeff, although Greg represents the Booth part of this equation. And Greg, I believe you're going to tackle this question that we had from a texter.
Sure.
First, they asked about what about mesothelioma, and then they also followed up with exposure to asbestos that just occurred but may not show up as cancer for 20 years. These are probably two different things. Tackle that. What about something that happens while you're working but could lead to a cancer down the line?
Yeah, so with pretty much any type of cancer, there's always going to be a latency period that needs to be established. So an exposure at work can be a workers' compensation claim. You need to show that that exposure led to the injury and
that sounds hard.
Yeah, and caused the cancer diagnosis. So oftentimes, experts are involved in these types of situations, and people who deal with those types of cases. We've actually, unfortunately, had to do with many cases of firefighters contracting cancer, and we've dealt with experts across the country to show that they have a higher risk of exposure at work to different carcinogens, which then can lead to different types of cancer. So,
I mean, do the experts even dive into how many times this firefighter was exposed line of duty, the preponderance, the likelihood that it would be something else versus this? And then, I mean, at some point it becomes a numbers game, right?
It becomes really complicated because they dive into your past. Were you a smoker in the past? There's all kinds of things. They look at the number of live fires you were exposed to. What are the type of carcinogens that are recognized by, you know, the International Agency for Research on Cancer that you can then prove you were exposed to?
Right.
And so you have to have all of that in order to say, yes, it's more likely than not this cancer is related to these exposures and these cumulative effects of these exposures at work.
But then is that 3-year window you talked about out the window at that point? Because what happens if the cancer doesn't show up for 6 or 7 years?
Yeah, it's not out the window. It's when you become aware of it or should have known that there's something wrong. So
you may not know until first symptoms or you're diagnosed for some people.
Exactly. And especially with the question regarding asbestos and mesothelioma, those cases are often many, many years after the exposure. But there's a whole different sort of system out there and a whole different realm in regarding mesothelioma cases and different trusts that have been set up. Those cases are going to be paying out for many, many, many years. There is the Illinois Workers' Compensation Act and in conjunction with that, the Occupational Disease Act. But mesothelioma cases can also fall into a whole different realm as well.
Okay. This is an interesting question. If a hospital employee catches a bacterial infection at the hospital they work at, is that workers' comp? How do you prove that you contracted the disease at work? That's an interesting question. And a lot of ones you deal with.
Yes, absolutely. And it would be workers' compensation. So, you know, in this field, we see all kinds of kind of strange things. We've had cases dealing with MRSA and all kinds of staph infections. Those are absolutely cases. They fall under the Occupational Disease Act, just like COVID would. And those are definitely cases. You have to prove that it's more likely than not you got that from work. Being in a hospital setting, I hate to say it's presumed, but it certainly seems logical that it's more likely you got 100%. A staph infection or MRSA from working in a hospital versus being at home.
You said more likely than not. Is that the burden of proof? Is over 50% like in a civil trial where you're just trying to show a preponderance of evidence? The burden is not on you to show beyond a reasonable doubt. Is that the burden we're talking about here?
It's more likely than not. Yes, correct.
And is this, and that's a great point to bring up, you mentioned it's not a lawsuit when you do workers' comp, that you're not going through a normal law process. Is it just a judge, an arbitrator? Who's the person that you talk to about this stuff?
So an arbitrator at the Illinois Workers' Compensation Commission will preside over these claims. And, you know, it dawned on me while Greg and Jeff were explaining several things today, we're attacking this today and we're discussing it as if the employers or the insurance companies accept every claim and don't push back on anything, which isn't the case. That's
right.
Why you need to navigate. Traveling employees, jurisdiction, all of these things are some of the heaviest litigated areas of these claims. So while we say that we believe these claims fall within the ambit of those doctrines, it doesn't always mean that they're accepted by the employer. So that's an important thing.
Can you guys put on your headphones and make sure you can hear? Because we actually do have a caller I want to get. There's dials right in front of you that say headphone to turn up or down if you hear me or not. You all hear me now? Good? Okay, very good. Let's go to the phone lines. Sean has a question. Sean, you're on WGN. What's your question?
Hi. I happen to be a dentist, and I had a patient that was involved with the workman's comp case. Long story short, he needed a couple of teeth crowned because he fell at work and he had broken some teeth. They needed to be crowned. For easy math, we'll just say I typically charge $1,000. When I was done with workman's comp case, they paid about $600 for each crown. And the problem that I always, that concerns me is the fact that my cost, my overhead cost, were unaffected. You know, I still had to pay my employee, my assistant,
right,
the same hourly wage rate. You know, the lab bill that I do the lab work with, you know, I can't say to my employee or to the lab, well, this is a workman's comp case, so, you know, you should work at a discounted
right.
hour or lab cost.
So you're wondering about that discrepancy and how that gets ironed out, or if you're just out of luck?
Well, yeah. Am I out of luck for something like that? Or, I mean, yeah, I mean, because through no fault of my own,
right,
it's like, you know, I'm hit with the penalty, and with an overhead, and, you know, for that specific case, you know, did we make money or did we just break even?
For sure. Hey,
or
Sean, I don't mean to cut you off. I just want to get an answer because we're running out of time. Any thoughts on that? That's an interesting. I had never heard it from that angle.
Yeah, you know, the Illinois Workers' Compensation Act actually has a fee schedule written into it. And so actually, CPT codes and charges for actual procedures and what was done is all governed by a fee schedule in Illinois. Typically speaking, I'm a little surprised to hear that response that it was less than what he would typically get, because most of the time, the Illinois fee schedule pays more than what Blue Cross would pay, or Medicare would pay, or certainly Medicaid would pay. So from an orthopedic standpoint, which is what we see most of the injuries in work comp, those are often paid at a higher rate than some other health insurance.
Sean could maybe talk to the board. I don't know who he'd be able to talk to. That seems like I get his problem, right? You don't want to be underpaid for services that you rendered. I don't know. It's an interesting one. Sean, I don't have an answer for you. Do you guys have an answer for him or no?
Yeah, I think it's something in dealing with the insurance carrier who's paying his bill and making sure that it's paid properly at the correct fee schedule rate. Oftentimes, insurance carriers will say, well, we don't accept that charge, or we don't pay whatever for this CPT code. So sometimes it's how it's billed. I think it's a little unusual, but something that he should talk to the insurance carrier about.
Jeff, we have 30 seconds. You wanted to get this in. You are entitled to three pillars, including getting paid while you're off, the medical bills, and a settlement that people sometimes don't get, right?
Right, for permanency, the permanent nature of your injury. And it's something that people are saying, well, I'm happy. I was paid while I was off. My bills are paid. Everything's good. But that third prong is something that really needs to be addressed.
Talk to professionals like Darielt Booth. TBfirm.com, 630-526-4242. We're getting all these questions now. We're out of time. Ryan, Greg, Jeff, we'll do it again soon, okay?
We'll be back.
Thank you.
All right, that's going to do it for Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association.